Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. Today, we're talking about the economy, from the latest jobs reports to fears about the costs of AI and how it's reshaping the workforce. Let's kick things off with Newell Normand at WWL with the latest jobs numbers.
Now joined by Sean Higgins, Competitive Enterprise Institute Research Fellow. Sean, welcome to the show. What can we glean from this report?
Well, the top line numbers were marginally good, 64,000 jobs, beating most estimations, which were around 45,000. But that's down from where we were earlier in the year, and there's a lot of other sort of worrying data related to that. The October had a loss of 105,000 jobs. The numbers for August and September were revised downwards by 33,000 jobs. And the thing that really stood out to me as I looked at it was that the number of people who are only working part-time for economic reasons, that is, the people who want full-time jobs but can't find them, was up 909,000 from September, almost a million people. And that's worrying, because what it suggests is that a lot of employers are cutting back on hours.
I apologize for interrupting, but expound on that for our listening audience.
What it suggests is that employers are cutting back on hours. One of the things that a lot of employers do when they're faced with a situation where they've got to cut costs and they're trying to look at labor costs, but they don't want the negative publicity of layoffs. And also, they don't want to lose people, because it is hard to find good people and rehire them once you've let them go, is that they'll simply reduce the number of hours that they work. The average work week in America isn't 40 hours. It's actually 34, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And what we're seeing is a lot of employers are cutting back even more on that. So that what they're showing is that there is a fair amount of weakness in the employment area. They're trying to hold off from doing the worst part about it, which is just letting people go. But employers are cutting back quite a bit.
And as we look, is there any particular region of the country where you're seeing this happen more than others?
I think it's pretty broad-based. The things where you're seeing where it's hurting the most is, for example, transportation and warehousing lost 18,000 jobs last year. And, places like Tennessee, for example, are going to be very hurt a lot by that, because they're one of the major hubs for interstate commerce. And whereas on the other side, things that added jobs were areas like healthcare, which is, part of that is simply, the aging of the population. And we're seeing more, things for like nursing and resident care facilities, those are growing. So that's part of where that's coming from. But those are things that's fairly universal stuff. So I don't see a particular region of the country hurting that much. Everyone is taking it. It's obviously going to vary from state to state and with some certain regulations. I think California probably takes it even a little worse than some of the others, because some of these states have very high minimum wage laws, and that sort of dissuades a lot of people. But for the most part, it's pretty much every way in the country is hurting in about the same way.
When we talk about warehousing, would distribution centers fall under that category?
I believe so, yes.
Because we keep hearing a lot about AI and the utilization of AI, and it comes up in the distribution center kind of, mantra all the time of how many jobs that they're going to be able to replace by automation and AI. And I'm curious whether or not you think that we're beginning to see the gleanings of an AI impact.
I don't think so much in that. That's still a lot of stuff where It requires human labor to sort of move and guide stuff around. The technology for that type of replacement doesn't really exist at this point. There's a lot of investment in AI where you're seeing it is more sort of in the information technology, communications technology sectors.
There's been some talk, too, about significant reductions in white-collar jobs, you know, kind of your top-line administrative, just below C-suite. You know, level type of management positions. What are you gleaning there, if anything?
That is an area where some of this is happening, where there's a lot of sort of concern. I think the concern is a bit more heightened compared to where it is actually happening, but it is there. I mean, a lot of this investment in AI, a lot of the stuff that is being targeted ultimately is these type of white collar, as you say, C-suite jobs. But it hasn't happened quite yet. Again, the technology isn't quite as far along as people think, but some businesses are definitely looking in that direction.
Does this bring about a scenario where we're going to have to rethink, re-engineer, recalculate the way that we look at the job market with this onset of AI? That just the nature and the presentation of these jobs, it's going to be different. We're going through a transformation right now in the labor market, maybe that we hadn't seen in a long time.
All technologies like this are very sort of disruptive, and they will take things away. Now, typically what happens historically is it gets rid of the sort of lower, more drudgery area job. What is different with AI is that it you know, the belief is that it can take away jobs that require human creativity, stuff that was seen as previously untouchable, and that's part of the reason why there's so much anxiety relating to it. I don't actually think that's going to happen in the longer term, because AI just doesn't. People tend to overestimate what AI can actually do.
I would agree.
But the flip side of that is there are a lot of people who are investing in it in the hopes that it can do that. And that investment, they're going to try and get some return out of that investment and try and use it that way. I think what's going to happen is you'll see a lot of people trying to replace jobs with AI, and they'll start producing inferior products as a consequence, because AI functionally just isn't human. It doesn't have that level of creativity. It's basically backwards looking. So you can't really use it to replace creativity, and they'll create bad products and they'll suffer from doing it that way.
One of your peers at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, Ryan Young, a senior economist, says disco isn't making a comeback, but stagflation might be. And now your thoughts.
Yeah, Ryan is a clever guy, and he has a good insight. We are seeing a sort of similar situation where we're getting some of the worst effects of both recessions and inflation at the same time. Prices are going up, but hiring is being cut back at the same time. And that's not good. Now, we're not quite in the same throes of that yet. We need to keep looking at the stuff. But the warning signs are there. We need to get the economy to a more settled spot. We need to get past all this back and forth over the tariffs, because businesses can't plan or invest in the long run, and there's a lot of just sort of uncertainty regarding how much they can hire, where they're going to locate, that type of stuff. And even if you think ultimately you want to keep the foreign products out, we still at least need to know what the rules are, so businesses can plan around that. And that's the problem we're having right now, is nobody knows. It may change tomorrow or the next day. The Supreme Court may decide it's all going to go away. The administration may change tactics, and that's the problem.
You know, oftentimes you have to get worse before you get better sometimes, but there's an observation here by Ryan as well, that the labor market, that the manufacturing sector has contracted for 9 straight months. And that's been a top-line issue for the Trump administration, one that they've had a lot of eyes on bringing manufacturing back domestically here to the United States. What does your sense tell you that what's going wrong? Is it all pointing towards tariffs?
That is a major part of it. I mean, the problem with it is the assumption is, well, if you have high tariffs, people will have to buy American products. Well, first off, tariffs never make anything cheaper. They just make alternatives more expensive. The other problem is those manufacturers they sell their goods abroad. That's where a lot of their profits come from. So if we get into tariff wars and they start coming up with tit-for-tat tariffs, they can't sell their stuff to other countries. The other issue is they import a lot of raw materials from other countries, some stuff you just can't find. So also, if that stuff becomes more expensive, it becomes difficult for the manufacturers to make things, and or more expensive for them to make things. In the first Trump administration, they put in a lot of effort to try and protect the domestic steel industry. Well, but that hurt the rest of manufacturing because they use steel in their products, and suddenly the cost of steel was more effective. So it was helping the steel workers at the expense of, you know, the car manufacturers, the construction industry, a lot of these other people that use the same sort of stuff. I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, they don't call economics a dismal science for nothing. And helping one person can sometimes mean hurting a lot of other people.
This whole tariff strategy is not ever going to be the same as it once was 40, 50 years ago, right? I mean, it's different.
Yeah.
It seems to me like we're seeing that difference, right? And we're feeling that difference.
It's easier to do in the sort of sense that the Trump administration is ideally trying to do it when the economy is smaller and, you know, the amount of trade is more discrete and you can focus on particular industries. But, you know, we're a country of 340 million odd people. We're incredibly diverse in terms of, you know, what we sell, what we buy, and who we sell and who we buy it to. And the more you sort of muck around with that, the more unintended consequences you're going to have. And that's just the fact of it. A lot of the sort of commentary and stuff about, well, tariffs worked in this situation, that's looking back at stuff going back to like almost the pre-industrial era. The economy has changed and diversified so much since then that those type of examples just really aren't applicable to today.
I mean, I guess it would be safe to say that our economy is so much more nuanced today than it was in 1950, you know, and I read some of those same examples that you've mentioned, you know, in stuff that's being authored, and I'm like, oh, but I don't understand. I mean, the way we conduct ourselves today is vastly different than what happened. The supply chain works vastly different. Almost every component part of the economy is working different.
Here's more from KCBS on how the numbers show formerly stable white-collar jobs are shakier than ever before.
The air.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
The air of security around white-collar jobs is evaporating as artificial intelligence turns up the heat on the American economy. It's been a year of high-profile layoffs and subsequent hiring woes. To break it all down, we're joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Giacomo Santangelo, senior lecturer in the Department of Economics at Fordham University. Now, how would you describe the white-collar labor market as we head into 2026? What has changed since, say, post-pandemic?
Well, I think since the post-pandemic, many economic forces are at work at the time, which, you know, are unprecedented. The tariffs that we're subjected to right now, the inflation that we're experiencing as a result of that, as well as the holdover from the COVID stimulus, as well as this growth of generative AI coming into the labor market, is really, you know, fermenting this very uncomfortable storm for the U.S. economy. I understand the president last night spoke on, you know, the state of the economy, but whether he's just getting bad data from the people that are talking to him, or he just straight up was lying. Most of the things that he said last night just weren't true about the U.S. economy. You know, when you go to the doctor and you say, I have a headache, the doctor tries to find a reason why you have a headache and fix it. He doesn't look you straight in the eye and go, no, you don't. The U.S. labor market is not in a good shape, and it's not looking very good for, 2026.
Giacomo, we're getting some good questions coming in from KCBS listeners. You mentioned AI. Here's one. Corporate leaders frequently cite AI when discussing white-collar layoffs. Is it really all AI's fault? I think that's a great question.
No, I think in the beginning of the year, it was Doge's fault. With all of the government layoffs we saw, you have to remember that for every one government job, there are multiple private sector jobs that support that. So a lot of the job loss that we saw over 2025, was because of policy. I mean, in the beginning of the year, President Trump, on Liberation Day, made a comment about the fact that children in the United States have too many toys. And that for Christmas, they don't need to get as many toys. And what toys they do get should be more expensive. Now, that's very bizarre comment for the President of the United States to say, that children have it too good and they should get fewer toys. But beyond that, beyond the war on Christmas, I think the issue there is, if children are getting fewer toys, that means parents are spending less money at the holidays. And we've seen over the course of the last couple of days, multiple surveys that Americans are planning to spend less this holiday season, which is not good for the U.S. economy. That means less of a demand for workers to sell those goods to Americans, parents and children. So, no, I don't think generative AI is the main reason why we're seeing job loss in the United States right now.
All right. KCBS listener Chris, I see your question. I want to get to that in just a sec. But following up on AI, is there an argument that for every human job that AI might replace, that there are humans creating the AI that is taking that role?
So, if you go to your grocery store and you see that they have self-checkout, you used to be able to go to the grocery store and there may have been 15, 20, maybe even 30, if it was a big supermarket, checkout people. But now it's self-checkout. So automation has taken jobs away from 10, 15 people. And yes, one or two people created that machine, but you added two jobs and removed 15. So no.
You're not buying that one. Here's a
I don't buy that one.
Here's a question from KCBS listener Chris. Chris asks, what, if any, leverage does the average worker or even consumer have to combat the lack of job security? And then Chris goes on to wonder if something like the Target boycott actually has an impact on how companies might treat their workers or treat their consumers.
Well, I think the Target boycott was successful because of the solidarity of consumers. And we don't generally see that kind of solidarity across the board with regard to anything in the U.S. economy, generally speaking. So that's why we can pull on the Target boycott as a very good example, but we can't come up with four more recent ones. So I think that's, it is only through solidarity of consumers that we can do that. But at the end of the day, consumers have to choose to pay more money. They have to choose to put themselves out in order to make their point. And with inflation where it is right now and where it seems to be going, and unemployment going where it seems to be going, I don't know whether or not consumers have the ability to really do that.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
So we're looking at AI employees, and, yeah. and we know that a lot of people were hired. A lot of white-collar people were hired during the pandemic. Was there an over-hiring during that time of people in the tech industry? Because now, not a week goes by that we don't have stories of tech workers being laid off. I mean, we have just today on KCBS, two companies in San Jose are laying off hundreds of workers.
I think we have to remember that every year, at the end of the year, you know, in December, right now, we do see layoffs. That is a thing which happens every single year. And, you know, over the course of the last couple of years, many other things have been going on. So those headlines tend to get swept under the rug. But what's important to recognize is that historically, companies will always try and find cheaper ways to do what they do. And during COVID, what we learned, what companies learned and what consumers learned, is that it's a lot easier to do things with fewer workers than it is with more workers. So whether those are AI workers or those are actual human beings, what companies seem to be doing is trying to find a cheaper cost alternative.
How likely is it that finding flaws in AI-generated material will become a valuable skill and even a career path? In other words, AI might make mistakes and we need humans to troubleshoot.
Sure. But isn't it more likely that they're going to train a generative AI to look for those errors?
Well, maybe.
I think that's really... So, yes, you're going to create jobs for programmers to come up with other generative AIs to correct the generative AI errors. I think that's really where that's going.
Boy, that's where it starts to get, you know, interesting when you have the AI policing the AI. All of a sudden, it's really, you know, kind of like 2001: A Space Odyssey and HAL, I think. Many companies appear to be slowing hiring while expanding the job scope of existing roles. In other words, we're not going to hire any new people. We're just going to make the ones we have do more work. Are we seeing more responsibilities bundled into one employee?
I think this goes back to when everyone was talking about, you know, quiet quitting, where workers would look at their job description and say, this is all I'm going to do and I will do nothing else. And we talked about how empowered the average employee was because they were needed. Well, now, given the pressures of inflation and how desperately people need their jobs, because they have gone significantly into debt in order to just buy groceries, in order to buy food, in order to buy, you know, to have any semblance of a holiday. So now they're willing to do more things at the job. And firms and companies and managers see that. And they're willing to put that work onto existing employees rather than hiring new people.
Yeah, I think this next question plays right into that. Job hopping once played a central role in wage growth.
Yeah.
For professionals. You move on to a higher paying job. Is that channel narrowing these days?
Absolutely. You know, one has to look at these trends that we're hearing about on social media of people leaving the jobs websites, people moving away from LinkedIn because of this perception that a majority of the jobs that are listed, a majority of these job listings aren't even real. That these are performative job listings that companies are posting so they can say, look, we're looking to hire people, when in fact they aren't. They're just going to put more pressure onto their workers that they have. And again, I mean, this is very timely because here we are at the Christmas holiday season and, you know, Ebenezer Scrooge does ask Bob Cratchit to come in on Christmas, you know, because, you know, Bob's got a lot of bills with Tiny Tim and with all the kids and everything else. So Bob Cratchit doesn't really have much of a choice. And what the Trump administration seems to be doing is turning a majority of Americans into Bob Cratchit.
Performative job applications. I don't want to get too far into the weeds here, or job listings, not applications.
Sure.
So, I mean, I guess a lot of us, anybody who's really looked for a job, especially online, and you apply for something, we've always suspected, I wonder if this job listing's even real. Sometimes they're not.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, is that legal?
Oh, absolutely. Why is that not legal? Why wouldn't that be legal?
I guess a company can post anything they want.
Absolutely. You can put a job listing back in the days for us old folks, when there were want ads in the backs of newspapers, and you know, there were these job listings and people would call, and that's what you would do. You would get up in the morning, have your coffee, look at the job listings, circle the ones and make the phone calls. You know, there's no saying that those jobs are necessarily real jobs. And again, I don't know the reality of the performative job listing. What I know is that there is this perception among young people that these jobs are not real.
Yeah. I'm old enough that I can remember as a kid or young adult in the Central Valley growing up, sitting there with the Stockton Record, going to the want ads and circling, oh, this sounds interesting, this sounds interesting. Those days, you know, perhaps are behind us now. What do we tell people who are going into college? You know, I mean, if you're not studying something that is AI related, tech related, I mean, are you obsolete before you even graduate?
Well, I think we go through these periods of time where there are specific skills that companies are looking for. And back in the 90s, when companies were looking for workers who had an understanding of computers, and when I say an understanding of computers, how to turn them on, right? How to use Microsoft Excel, how to use, if you were an accounting student, Peachtree accounting software, right? Because that was where we were at that time. At this point, I think the question is, do you know how to write generative AI prompts to get good information, accurate information from ChatGPT and Claude by Anthropic and all these things? So I think that's where we are. And I think students going into college have to learn how to use these tools, because universities or firms that say, we don't want you to use it, would be like telling a student, I need you to do these tax returns, but you can't use a calculator, you have to use an abacus. Right? This is the most up-to-date tool, so there's no reason why you shouldn't know how to use it.
I wonder if at some point, you know, there's a recommendation that if you want some job security, maybe look at the trades. I mean, at this point, at least, a computer can't unclog your toilet or put a roof on your house.
Oh, absolutely. We've been talking about blue-collar workers and their job security for a very long time now. There was even an episode of South Park a year and a half ago about it, where they talked about the fact that the people in the labor market with the most power, the new billionaires, are the plumbers and the electricians and the HVAC people, because specifically in the episode, no one can figure out how to get ChatGPT to fix a clogged toilet, right? So I think that the trades are always going to be there. As a person who has a PhD in economics, that does me no good if, God forbid, I hear a drip in the middle of the night, or if my car breaks down on the George Washington Bridge, right? I call a person, and that person is going to charge me a premium to come get me. That person is going to charge me a premium to come out to my house in the middle of the night and stop the drip. But never have I been able to charge the university a premium to teach a class. I don't have that kind of power.
Here we are quoting South Park. It's life imitating art, imitating life, I suppose. All year, the construction of AI data centers has propped up the U.S. economy. But lawmakers are calling attention to the long-term impact on voters' utility bills. Who will pay for all of that electricity? A group of United States senators has written a letter demanding transparency on surging energy bills. Joining us live now on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline, one of those U.S. senators, Democrat Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut. Senator Blumenthal, it's good to talk with you. Are consumers going to have to foot the bill for the juice used by all these new data centers?
Consumers should not have to foot the bill. It's the tech companies that should pay for not only generating the electricity, but also transmitting it. We're talking about cost burdens in providing more electricity to run these huge data centers, which are expected to be built in literally the next year to 5 years, but also connecting them to individual households and to other users, the grid that transmits electricity, and the billions of dollars that it will take to fund these kinds of electricity costs ought to be paid by the ones who will profit from them, the data centers, the tech companies. And that's the purpose of our driving this point to the big tech companies and asking them how they expect to pay for them.
This is obviously a big issue here in the Bay Area with Silicon Valley. San Jose is becoming a hotbed for these AI data centers. And, you know, officials there want to know, gee, are our customers who are kind of innocent in all this going to have to foot the bill for the increased electric usage? What are you and your fellow senators asking for?
Well, let's be clear. The biggest tech companies have consistently said they want to pay their fair share of energy. But the question is, how much exactly is that fair share? And we say it should include not only the building of plants, for example, new power plants, probably a lot of them powered by natural gas, but also taking care of the costs environmentally of those new plants and the development of new sources of electricity, solar and wind, and the building of new lines to connect them to consumers. So the utility companies are spending billions of dollars updating the electrical grid to accommodate that unprecedented energy. And what we want from these data centers and the big tech companies building them is a plan so that the costs are not automatically borne by consumers. And, you know, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has responsibility for the grid. So it is a federal obligation. And the three of us, Senator Warren, Senator Van Hollen, and myself, have written these companies saying, what are you going to do so that fairness really is not just a matter of rhetoric, but reality?
Do you expect the companies to pay their fair share as they said they have going to do, or do you expect this to be passed on to the ratepayers?
They won't pay their fair share without a fight. That's been my experience as Attorney General of the state of Connecticut, as well as the United States Senator. I mean, they're trying to economize in every way to fatten their bottom lines. And so they're going to try to pass on to consumers as much as they can. That's why we need watchdogs in the state utility commissions, both in California, Connecticut, all around the country. But we also need the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to do its part. And we're exploring ways to make sure that there is proper oversight and scrutiny so that consumers are protected. Again, we're not trying to burden AI. We're not trying to stop it. AI is coming. In fact, the big tech companies have spent more than $360 billion, that's with a B, billion, on capital expenditures in just the first 9 months of this year. But we want to make sure those tech companies, and they can afford it, pay their fair share.
U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat from Connecticut, we appreciate you coming on. Obviously a big issue here in the Bay Area. Thank you for your input.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.